Well, in our Sunday evening services, we're working through Ecclesiastes, a biblical philosophy of life. And again, that's how I'm presenting this. And the idea of really understanding the theme, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. This life is so brief, it's just a breath, right? Just a whew, and it's gone. That doesn't mean it's unimportant. It doesn't mean it's meaningless. It does mean that we don't live for this life. We realize that God has given us an opportunity for the short life, and we seek to live in a way that would honor him. Now, we know that God is sovereign. He's in control of everything. Quick review, I won't read chapter 3, verses 1 through 15, that beautiful, wonderful poem. Many believe actually one of the most popular, well-known passages in the whole Bible. And again, the idea is not figure out what time it is, right? There's a time for this and a time for that. You better know the time is not what's going on there. It's the idea that there is a time for all that takes place because God is the one who ordains the time. God is the one who decrees the time. So whatever's going on in my life, even when I don't like it, I could be confident that there's still a sovereign king who has ordained what is coming into my life. The good news is he's not just a sovereign king. He's my heavenly father, and I hope you know him because that'll give you great confidence when you realize that he's sovereign over all. In light of God appointing a time for everything, Solomon chapter 3, verse 16 through chapter 4, 16 deals with six challenges or objections. What about injustice, death, oppression, envy, isolation, and popularity? Each of those is addressed and answered, separate message on each one. And then we jumped into chapter 5 where we begin a series of cautions or warnings. And the first two are pretty much related. They have to do with worship. In chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, let your words be few. Chapter 5, verses 4 through 7, keep your vows. Both of those, in a summary, we need to be careful how we worship the Lord. And we need to make sure that we watch our feet, as it says in chapter 5. Guard your steps and make sure that you're thinking about what you're doing and giving the Lord the honor and the glory that he deserves. And certainly part of that is listening and not talking. Part of that is making sure we're careful about any promises or vows we would make to the Lord. We had a sermon on each of those. The next couple are actually going to deal with finances. And tonight's message, another warning, our third warning, is don't be fooled by money. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. We'll be looking tonight at verses 8 through 12. I'll read through that now. If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official. There are higher officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. Now, that might be a little bit challenging. Some people take verse 8 and 9, keep it as a separate unit. Many others include it in verses 10 through 12, and I'm going to do that, so I'll continue to read verse 10, and we'll come back and talk about this. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. I think it's interesting in God's providence that we're covering verse 12, the weekend of Thanksgiving. So maybe there'll be some applications there for those of us who maybe had a little bit too much to eat, but hopefully thankful even as we did. Well, I've called the message, Don't Be Fooled by Money. We're going to begin with verse 8 and verse 9. And the point I want to begin with this evening is others will always have more. Always. You can work hard at getting power, political power. You can work hard at getting finances. And no matter how you work, turn around and you're going to see people that have more than you. And what makes it even worse is they misuse it frequently to hurt others. And that's a reality. Look at verse 8 again, please. If you see oppression of the poor, obviously that would be by the people that are rich, and denial of justice and righteousness of the province, so that would be people of political power. That's a reality. Let's just pause there. There are rich people who oppress the poor. There are powerful people that deny others justice and righteousness. That's just the way life is. Sinful people who have more power, more ability than us, take advantage of their power, of their ability, their political strength, their wealth. This is not new. We came across that in Ecclesiastes 4. I'll read again verse 1. Solomon says, I looked again at all the acts of oppression which are being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, that they had no one to comfort them, and on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. And that's the way life is. Don't be naive about that. That's what Solomon is saying. Do you see that in verse 8? In the second line of my Bible, verse 8, New American Standard, it says, don't be shocked at the sight. The ESV, don't be amazed at the matter. One commentator just translated it this way, paraphrased it this way. Don't be naive. Do you honestly think you're going to see social justice in this lifetime? How is that going to happen as long as this world is filled with sinful people? We live in a fallen world filled with sinful people, and people that have money and people that have power will frequently take advantage of those who have less. And that's just the way life is. And you're saying, so Greg, are you excusing sin? No, but I am saying you should understand it. Don't be surprised. And when you hear, when you read about what's taking place in the news, I mean, why would anyone be so naive as to be surprised? I've had people through the years say to me, you know, Greg, you're one of those like born-again Christian types. You're probably out of touch. And you know, you're a person who would be amazed at what I would tell you is going on in the world. And my response is, no. You're the one who's amazed because, see, you believe people are good. I believe people are sinful. So when I read about the most incredible acts of wickedness person on person, I find myself thinking, well, of course, because people don't know Christ and they're lost in their sin and they're frequently doing things that are very wrong. Don't be shocked at this. You say, okay, so what should I do? There's always something to be thankful for. Notice verse 9. Some consider it sarcasm. I'm not so sure that's true. You consider verse 8, all of the oppression of the powerful and the wealthy, all the way up, one official watches over another official, there are higher officials over them. Verse 9, after all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. You say, what does that mean? Be thankful. The rich and the powerful, as sinful as they are, they provide a needed function. They oversee agriculture. They oversee our roads, law, communication, law enforcement, right? As bad as government is, as sinful as wealthy people frequently are, tyranny is still better than anarchy. And even though we would not agree with much of what our own government does, Solomon is saying, I'm still thankful for government. And we too can be thankful that we don't live in a world, in a country at least, I know it varies by country, that is completely out of control. Even if it's for purely selfish reason, the king cultivates the field. And there are people who oversee agriculture, economics. We don't always agree with what they do. And yet we are blessed and we have much to give thanks for. Even though sinful people don't realize God often uses their decisions to be a blessing to his people. So the first thing we see in the text tonight is what? This idea of don't be fooled by money, meaning others will always have more. And no matter how much you try to move up the food chain, to climb the ladder, you're still going to look around and say, wow, there's a lot of people that have a lot more than me. Now, you might be thinking, okay, Greg, I'm good with that. I don't want to get to the top of the ladder. I know it's probably not even realistic for me to get to the top of the ladder. All I want to do is get up a few steps, okay? Would that be okay? Sure, it's not a problem. But let's see what Solomon has to say. Because remember, guys, this is a Christian or biblical philosophy of life. And what we're going to consider tonight should practically encourage you. Is it wrong to get a raise? No. Is it wrong to want a raise? No. Is it wrong to wish you had more money? No. But number one, make sure you realize others will always have more. And here's our second point. The money you get won't make you happy. I've worded it this way. It can't buy contentment. Notice verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. The more one has, the more one wants. One author put it like this: money is like seawater. The more one drinks, the more thirsty one becomes. Desire always surpasses acquisition. That's just the way life goes. Many of you have heard of this famous quote from the world's first modern era billionaire, John D. Rockefeller: how much money would it take to make you happy? And his response, of course, was what? Just a little more. The fact of the matter is, Solomon makes it very clear. Remember, he's a guy that has a lot of money. So listen to him, okay? Don't listen to me. I don't qualify. Most of us don't qualify. But here's a guy who has riches. And he's writing in verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. The fact is, money can't purchase satisfaction and contentment. It's simply not for sale. That's what this text is teaching us. We have to come to the place where we realize that it's okay to want to be content. It is a good thing to want to be content. But the path to it is not money. Paul wrote in Philippians 4:11, not that I speak from want, for I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Notice that last phrase, whatever circumstances I am. Some of you might have lower incomes. Some of you may have just kind of like middle of the road incomes. Some of you might have very, very generous incomes. And all of that is not directly related to your level of contentment. Careful. You'll notice I'm not saying that if you have a very secure level of wealth and you even have a lot of income coming in, that doesn't mean you can't be content. But it's making the point that the path to contentment is not the money that you have. 1 Timothy 6, 7-8, for we've brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. All it takes is the basics. That's all. And if you have the basics, food, covering, the things you need for everyday life, you're fine. And the fact of the matter is, beyond getting the basics of life, the more you increase your income, happiness doesn't follow. Generally, it doesn't make you any more happy or less happy. Now, if you don't have the basics of life met, it's true that there'll be a lower level of happiness, and research shows that. I'll mention that in just a bit. But once we get up to having our needs met, just being comfortable, if I could use that word, then happiness or contentment, I'm using those somewhat synonymously, doesn't really follow. You say, Greg, where do you see that? Right there in verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. So we're thinking, if I just had more money, I'd be satisfied. But the fact is, life doesn't work that way. If I just had more stuff, abundance, I would be happy. The fact of the matter is, life just doesn't work that way. And I realize some of you might say, well, Greg, do you really believe that's true? I don't need to support the Bible, but at times I illustrate the Bible with various illustrations. I'm going to use Time Magazine. They did a special issue, and this is 2017. It was called The Guide to Happiness. You can find this online. And I want to read just a little bit. I don't encourage you to read Time Magazine as a rule, but here's what I found, and I quote, "The new science of happiness starts with the simple insight, quote, we're never satisfied. We always think if we had just a little bit more money, we'd be happier," says Catherine Sanderson, psychology professor, Amherst College. "But when we get there, we're not. Indeed, the more you make, the more you want." It's a fascinating read. And they take a lot of different studies and kind of synthesize them together. Here's what research shows, and I hope I make this clear. If you are poverty level, okay, and then you move up to the median income in the United States, you generally will be more likely to be happy. Now, I actually looked up numbers, so I had some numbers. Poverty level in our country for people, roughly $20,000 annual income. Median household income. Okay, so that's household, maybe two wage earners, maybe one. But median income in our country, approximately $50,000. So if you're making roughly less than $20,000 for your family of four poverty level, and you get up to roughly 50, it's twice as likely that you'll be happy than if you're poverty level. That's true. And that makes sense. Because if you don't have that basic amount, then you might have trouble just having heat on a cold day, right? Having the transportation that you need to get back and forth to work, clothing, etc., that type of thing. But most people think, okay, Greg, let's just say a median income household, roughly $50,000. What if our household income goes up to 75? No significant change. 100? No significant change. 125? No significant change. 150,000 a year? No significant change. That's what the research shows. That the more you get, the fact of the matter is, the more you want. And in this article, they don't just stop there. They actually say, we would like to figure out why. And here's what the Time Magazine article came up with. I'm going to share the two reasons that they say this is a reality. Something to think about. Number one, more becomes normal. We are a very adaptive people. And we get used to whatever we have quite quickly. You say, what do you mean? How does that work? Okay, here we are. Maybe you just get married, or maybe you're single even, and you're on your own. This is normal. And you're making your whatever, your first job, I don't know, you're making your $25,000, $30,000 a year. It's what you're used to, and you're glad. And then maybe over time, you go up, and maybe you're making your $50,000 a year. And that's a step up for a very short period of time. But now I've been living here. This is normal. And then maybe something happens and you get up to your 75 or whatever, you know, you pick the number. How long does that last? A short period of time, but now this is normal. And then go up to your $100,000 a year, and that's really nice for a very short period of time, and then it's normal. And what happens is, just like I have on the slide, we adapt. And more becomes the new normal, verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. Solomon then has that little phrase at the end of verse 10. This too is vanity. I think the people at Time, the editors who put this research together in a very readable way, I think they nailed it. That's the way life goes. But there's a second reason, according to the Time article. The fact is, money doesn't buy happiness, because more money leads to more stress. And the more we have money, the more we are concerned about things. The more we have to watch things that maybe in the past you simply didn't have to watch. You say, what kind of things, and how does that happen? I think this second point is a great segue to the next point right back in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, right? Because number one, according to the Time article, more becomes normal, we adapt. Number two, more leads to more stress. Let's get back to Ecclesiastes 5. Number two, it can't buy contentment. The authors there, the editors of Time saw that. And then number three, it will complicate your life. That's verse 11. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? Increased income demands increased responsibilities, increased expenses, right? Many of those are legitimate, right? I mean, if you have more money, then that wealth demands management. And so now you have to employ a financial planner, and he'll take a percentage of it, right? Your taxes will go up. The government will take a percentage of it. But you might want to make sure you don't pay any more taxes than you have to, so you have to hire an accountant, and he'll get a percentage of it. And if you really, really have a lot of money, you even have to be concerned with basic safety and security. For years, Nancy and I just had a little, like, private joke. You know, people say, you know, knock on your door, phone call, whatever. Hey, we have a special. Would you like a home security system put in at a very reduced rate? And we always say, if anybody breaks into our house, they will leave us a gift, okay? They will see that we don't have anything valuable. And it's kind of nice in a certain way. This caution, this does not mean that having wealth is a bad thing. But if we're thinking biblically, as Ecclesiastes is trying to help us do, we're realizing that the fact of the matter is, when the amount of income you have increases, life simply gets more complicated. And when good things increase, those who consume them increase. I only mentioned good things, like having to hire an accountant or a financial planner. You also could throw in all of the negatives about friends who all of a sudden decide that they want to be your friend, right? Family members you've never heard from in the past all of a sudden are burdened to hang out with you, right? And all of those other things, one commentator, Kidner, puts it this way, that a lot of times increases in wealth, and this is how he said it, it seems kind of cold, but an increase in wealth attracts an increase in parasites. And to a degree, no doubt, that's true. So if I'm thinking about, okay, I want to be a happy person, I want to be content, the first thing I have to realize, verses 8 through 9, others will always have more than I have. So the idea of I want to have more than someone, well, you know, that thought's not even worth considering. Well, I just want to be happy or content. The fact of the matter is, if I just have my basic needs met, more money won't buy it. It's just not for sale. And it's not wrong to have more income. It's not wrong to have a bigger house, a nicer car, but that will all complicate your life. That's what Solomon's trying to help us understand here. All types of complications. I want to throw in just another spiritual warning. We'll call it a potential spiritual complication. Paul writes in 1 Timothy 6:9, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. So if you're here thinking, Greg, I still want to have a certain level of income, even though I realize it's not necessarily going to make me happier, and I realize it's going to lead to complications, is that okay? Just be careful, because there are spiritual ramifications of that. Does it mean it's wrong to be wealthy? Obviously. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, many foolish and harmful desires. The next verse, verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And I think most of you have heard this, but let's be clear. It's not money is the root of all sorts of evil, but the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. And some, not all, but some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And so we want to be careful to acknowledge that finances, increased wealth, number one, others will always have more. Number two, it can't buy contentment. Number three, it will complicate your life. And number four, one of those complications might be something that's a little more challenging than we first think. Let me read verse 12. It says in verse 12, the sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. I've worded it this way. It may cost you sleep. So here you are, to get back to verse 11. Here you are, good things are increasing. Life is becoming more complicated. The end of verse 11, what advantage is there except to look on? You can't really change it. See, if you have a lot of money, there are things you have to be concerned about. You simply do. If you have a lot of money in the stock market, let me go back. I looked up a couple of things just to try to make the illustration. Back in 2008, September 29th, the stock market lost 7% of its value. And a lot of people got really, really uptight. Makes sense. Because if you have a lot of money in the stock market, you're waking up each day thinking, should I pull it out? Should I leave it in? Is this just a temporary drop? Is it going to rebound and come raging higher? And maybe this isn't what a bear market or a bull market. Maybe. But if you don't have a lot of money, you hear the news that the Dow is down, and you think, huh, that's nice, and you go to sleep. And that's what Solomon is helping us to understand, verse 12. The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much. He works. He doesn't have a lot of concerns. He gets his physical exercise. He sleeps well. But notice, second half of verse 12, the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. The ESV and the NASB have full stomach. Other translations translate this as an abundance. So it just might mean you have an abundance of things. It might literally be food. Certainly, again, the Thanksgiving thing, if you do overeat, which was a luxury in the ancient world, you would have trouble sleeping. But let's even leave the assumption that it has to be a full stomach, and maybe it's just an abundance like the NIV and the KJV have. The fact of the matter is, here's a guy who's thinking about his riches. He's thinking about how to hang on to them. He's not out doing physical work. He pays other people to do that, right? If you're very financially secure, guys, you're not out cutting your grass as a rule. You don't push your lawnmower. What do? You pay someone else to cut your grass. Then you realize you don't get any exercise, and so you pay a gym so you can go work out. Think about it, okay? And that's what people do. I used the stock market as an illustration. Let me jump back to that real quick. I looked at a chart just this past week, trying to just think of an illustration for this. Since the market crashed, quote-unquote, in 08, and then came back beginning in 09, from 09 to today, if you just look at it generally, the market's been strong. It's going up and up and up, higher than it's ever been in incredible ways. And if you have a lot of money, you're nervous. Because how much higher will it go? Do you pull out now and save yourself a lot? Or do you ride it out and maybe have to pull it out after the market goes south and you end up losing a lot? If you're here tonight and you are very financially secure, you understand completely what I'm saying. There are other people tonight who would probably say, Greg, I don't have a clue what you're saying. Okay. And maybe your income is more modest, but you're not up at night worrying about finances. It's just part of it. You can't get away with it. It may not only complicate your life, number three, it may cost you sleep. Now, again, let me be clear. Am I saying that it's wrong? You know, again, wealthy is such a subjective term, but I'll use it. Am I saying it's wrong to be wealthy? No. Am I suggesting it's wrong to have your income increase? No. But if you really want to think biblically, you have to realize no matter how much you have, there'll always be people that have more. That's number one. No matter how much you have, you can't buy contentment because it's not for sale. That's number two. No matter how much you have, the more you get, the more complicated your life will be. Not saying that that's a sinful thing. That's simply reality. And one of those complications is it may cost you more than you bargained for. It may actually cost you sleep. This, I believe, in a nutshell, a concise presentation, would be a biblical view of money. Most people don't understand this. Most people still believe, like this ad I'll throw up as we close. This was a well-known ad many years ago from an automaker. It says, whoever said money can't buy happiness isn't spending it right. And there you have a picture of, at the time, a late model Lexus automobile. Now, I actually thought, dare I use this, because some of you may drive a Lexus. And you say, Greg, I feel really bad. I have a Lexus and you're showing me that it's not wrong to drive a Lexus. You say, but I'm here on a Sunday night and the Lord's convicting me and I don't think I should have it. Give it to me, okay? And I will drive it for God's glory and we'll all be good, okay? Now, that was completely tongue-in-cheek. Thank you for laughing. God has been so good to me. And I'm very, very thankful for the vehicles we have. But this is how the world thinks. The world thinks, you know, I'm making this much money. And if I could just have a little more and spend it right, Solomon says no. If I could just get a little more and spend it properly, research says no. Social psychologists say no. It's simply not true. That's not the way it is. So for all of us tonight, as we're thinking, Lord, it would be so nice if I had a nicer whatever, income, home, car, vacation, what have you. None of those are wrong. And if you're here listening thinking, so you're trying to encourage kind of like an ascetic lifestyle, that is certainly not the case at all. But just be real. And reality is what? Don't be fooled by money. Others will always have more. More won't make you more happy. More will complicate your life. And more may cost you sleep. To the degree that God is blessing you and prospering you, and maybe your income is going up in great ways, praise the Lord. And use it for His glory. But I hope you'd also be honest enough to realize, even though in this last year or couple of years, I've certainly had an increase, I have to admit it hasn't made me any more content. The bottom line, walk with Christ and you'll find the peace that you've always wanted. Don't walk with Christ. And there's not enough money in the world to give you the peace that we all deep inside desire. Don't be fooled by money. Let's pray.